Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and it is Open Forum Day here on Catholic Answers Live. If you've got a question, we're going to do our very best to get you an answer, whether it has to do with the sacraments or the teachings of the church or heaven, hell, purgatory, judgment, whatever. Anything you want to know about the Catholic faith, the Catholic Church is welcome on Open Forum Day. If you're not Catholic, you're welcome. If you're Catholic, you're welcome. 888-31-TRUTH is the number, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Tim Staples, Director of Apologetics and Evangelization here at Catholic Answers, also the author of Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines. Tim, how are you?
I am doing well, Cy Kellett. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well. I'm sure lots of people are glad to hear that you're well, but you will be missing you for a few days coming up.
Yeah, about a week. I have a surgery tomorrow on my leg, so folks say a prayer or two for me.
Yeah.
Can't wait to be back.
and on your legs, because this is all connected to, a vascular syndrome or problem that you have with?
Yeah, vascular problem in my right leg and a couple of clots that are in there. They're going to yank that out with the veins, so...
That sounds like fun, Tim Staples.
Yeah.
We'll be praying for you here. I know many people will be praying for you. It'll be nice to have it over. I guess that's the way
sure
to think
about it. It sure will. I was telling Cy before we went on the air, this time tomorrow it will be over, and I'll be happy.
Yes, right.
I'll probably still be in La La Land, but I'll be happy.
Right. It's the coming out of it. That's where you're like, who am I? Wait, tell me again. Who am I?
Who are all these people looking at me?
Yeah, right. And what did I do to get here? Open Forum. The lines fill up quickly on Open Forum Day, so
yes,
go ahead and dial
do.
If you've got a question. 888-31-TRUTH. It's really nice that we've got Tim here with us for 2 hours. So if you get in the first hour and we don't get to you, well, we'll get to you the second hour. Lots and lots of folks going to get their questions answered. But I'm going to start with a question that came to me via email today.
Okay. So, fire away.
Because we did the game show last week with Carlo.
Yes.
Who was just fantastic. Carlo,
all right.
He's just great for that. And then we had one question about the magisterium.
Yes.
About basically it was about what does the term magisterium mean.
Yes.
And this woman says Sally is her name, and she wrote, and she said she's not Catholic, and she always wondered about what the word magisterium means.
Right.
And she said she kind of vaguely, because she listens to a lot of Catholic radio, she said
yes.
She vaguely got the idea it might be like a council or a committee or something that they would give the official teaching.
Right.
So she said, could you just tell me what is magisterium?
Sure, and that's a great question. Magisterium comes from a Latin word, magister, which means teacher. And basically, the magisterium is the teaching authority of the Catholic Church that was established by Jesus Christ. And that is all of the bishops in union with the Bishop of Rome. That is the magisterium of the church. Now, the Pope has a unique magisterium or a magisterial authority to function on his own. So he can act with his teaching authority all by himself as Vatican I defined, infallibly, apart from the consensus of the others. He doesn't have to take a vote. The Pope can speak as one man apart from the consensus of the others. And that is the magisterium of the Pope. He speaks not only in the name of Christ or as the vicar of Christ, but he also speaks for the entire church.
Okay.
As well. So the Pope alone. However, the bishops, their magisterial authority can only be exercised in union with the Pope. So an individual bishop does not have magisterial authority apart from union with the Pope. And you see that, by the way, beautifully revealed to us by Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 16, verses 18 and 19, and in Matthew 18, verses 15 through 18. And this is how he does it. In Matthew 16, of course, beginning in verse 13, Jesus asked the apostles. This is interesting because Jesus initiates this conversation. In other words, he's got something up his sleeve.
Okay.
He's about to reveal something really important here because he says, who do men say that I am? Right? Well, they respond. Some say you're Jeremiah. Some say you're Elijah. Some say you're this prophet, that prophet. And he says, who do you say that I am? And of course, Peter responds, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And that was the occasion for Jesus to teach us about first the Pope's unique individual magisterial authority, because there, notice, Peter declares the truth of the matter. And then Peter says, blessed are you, Simon, son of John, for flesh and blood hath not revealed this to you, but my Father is in heaven. And I say to you, you are Peter, the rock, and upon this rock I will build my church. And I will give, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against, and I will give to you, now interesting, this is singular in the Greek, I will give to you, soi here in the dative case, to you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall be loose, or literally in the Greek, shall have been loosed in heaven. Right? So there you have a clear reference to the fact that Peter has his unique authority where God divinely reveals to him the truth. He proclaims it, and it's backed up by the authority of heaven, right? Clearly. And it's Jesus, you know, seven times in three verses, he uses the second person personal pronoun in the singular, right? It's just you, dude, right? So he's given Peter this authority, whatever he binds on. That's a radical statement in Scripture.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically like giving your son the checkbook and saying, whatever you want to write, you just whatever, right? And
that is never going to happen.
That will never, but I'll back you up with an infinite amount of money in the bank account, right? Okay, so there you have it clear there, the magisterial authority of the Pope. But then two chapters later in Matthew 18, 15 through 18, Jesus then says to all the apostles, and it's very important because Peter's there too, in union with Peter, he says, if your brother shall offend against thee, go tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you've gained your brother. If he won't hear you, you take one or two with you, right? But if he will not even hear them, you tell it to the church. And then he says, for, you know, if he doesn't hear the church, he has to be as a heathen and a publican. For whatever you, that is all the apostles, in union with Peter, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. So here it's plural. It's a different word, second person personal pronoun, in the plural. So there you have all of the bishops there, the apostles, their successors are the bishops, in union with Peter, given that same authority minus the keys. Only Peter got the keys, symbolizing a unique authority he has, but they have that same authority to bind and loose, but they have to be in union with Peter. So I know that's a kind of a lengthy definition for you, but it's absolutely rooted in sacred scripture, something that the church has lived and practiced as well as believed for 2,000 years.
So if I could just, what happens if there's a, like the church is divided on an issue, then it's,
yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
What happens there?
That's the whole issue here. In fact, that's how Jesus couches his teaching in Matthew chapter 18. He sets it up by, if there is a disagreement in the church, if your brother offends against thee, what do? You go tell him his fault between you and him alone. But what if he doesn't agree? Well, take one or two with you, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. But if he will not hear them, tell it to the church. And the one who fails to hear the church is to be as a heathen and a publican. That's language of excommunication,
but
basically.
So like even on a big doctrinal issue.
That's
say,
right.
Half the bishops say this and half the bishops say that.
That's right. In fact, it's situations like that that bring about exactly what Jesus envisions there, the calling of a council where the church gets together. And by the way, we see that in action in Acts chapter 15 in Antioch, where Paul and Barnabas are called in to deal with the situation with the Judaizers that was threatening to tear the church apart, and they couldn't settle it. Imagine, they're kind of following Jesus' command here in Antioch. They bring in Paul and Barnabas to settle the thing, and they still can't settle it. So what do? The Bible says in Acts chapter 15, the first four verses, they determined to send up to Jerusalem to the apostles and elders to consider this question. And they had the first council where the church declares on the matter. Check that out, verses 7 through 11. And then the actual council document that comes out in Acts 15, verses 24 through 28, where the council fathers say, it seemed good to us and to the Holy Spirit to declare unto you none other than these necessary things. And then in Acts 16, 4, they send out the dogmata, by the way, is a Greek word, the decrees, which were to be obeyed and believed in all the troubled churches. So you have exactly what Jesus gives us in Acts 16 and Acts 18, carried out in Acts 15, and the church has been doing it for 2,000 years.
Sally, so glad you listened to Catholic Radio and that you enjoyed the game show. Now, I hope we are clear on what we mean by magisterium when we say it. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Tim Staples on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I want to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got going right now on subscriptions to our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. You can sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, we'll also give you a digital subscription to the magazine for free. Subscribe today by calling 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Sign up for a one-year subscription and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. Better yet, become a two-year subscriber and we'll drop the price by $20. That's a savings of $10 to $20 plus a free digital subscription when you sign up for Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now because this is a limited-time offer. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com today.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking book by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can give to anyone as a starting point for helping them to find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Tim Staples is our guest. Tim is the Director of Apologetics and Evangelization here at Catholic Answers. I want to remind you that on Open Forum Day, you can call with any question you've got on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church, and you don't have to be Catholic to call. Anybody can call 888-318-7884. For a minute there, I almost forgot the phone number. 888-318-7884. And just like in the Bible, we have 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. Here at Catholic Answers, we have 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. And joining us in the studio now is this – I don't want to say if you're 1 or 2 Timothy, but in addition to Tim Staples, we have Tim Ryland here with us. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Yes. I'm clearly 2 Timothy.
You're 2 Timothy?
Yeah, there's no doubt about
it. Did you get here later than Staples? He was here before you?
I actually was here before him, I had the temerity to leave and come back.
Oh, well, then you're 2 Timothy. Now you're 2 fiddle. Okay. Tim Ryland is the editor-in-chief of one of the finest Catholic magazines you will ever read.
And he will always be 1 Timothy to me.
Okay, fair enough.
Wow, Tim, I love you too.
A fascinating
title to this magazine. It's called Catholic Answers Magazine. And where did you get that?
You know, we prayed over it.
Did you really?
Yeah, laying on a
hand. And it came to you?
It came to us. And then we named the apostolate after the magazine.
Yes. I'm holding in my hands probably I think there will be no publication anywhere on earth that will give you a better look this year at the 50th anniversary of Humani Vitae than Tim did in Catholic Answers Magazine. I mean that sincerely. This is the May-June issue. Humani Vitae, why he was right 50 years ago, Pope Paul VI of much blessed memory gave us Humani Vitae. So what do you got cooking now, Ryland?
We got cooking for the next issue. Actually, the upcoming issue is being printed as we speak at our secret silo somewhere in the flyover states and should hit people's mailboxes within the next 10 to 12 days. Beyond that, our September-October issue is we have another themed issue like the Humani Vitae. It themed faith and science to go along with our conference.
Oh, what a great
same name, right?
Yeah, right.
Again, we came up with the magazine and then named the conference after it.
So. Okay, so Faith and Science is going to be our great big giant conference September 27th through 30th here in San Diego. But you said, well, we've got all these great speakers. I'll just publish the exact same stuff they're going to be talking about at the conference. Is that it?
I'm glad you mentioned that, Cy, because the opposite is true.
Oh, okay.
Everyone that comes to the conference in their conference packet will get a copy of the magazine, so we wanted to give them some ancillary material. We didn't want to just echo what they were going to be hearing our wonderful speakers talking about. So we've got all new material from evolution to Carlo's written a series of small, bite-sized articles about how not only does science not disprove faith, it points to faith.
Yes.
Some of the fine-tuning of physics.
Carlo is doing a great job on this.
Yeah, he really is.
Yes.
And he points out how if you're one iota off in some of these physical laws, the whole universe just explodes. So,
yes.
I mean, does that point to a creator? I think so.
Yeah, I think the fact that we don't explode is a very positive sign.
It's not in public.
Let me mention before we talk anymore about it, though, that it's also on sale right now. Like you can get a full year subscription at $10 off, 2 year subscription at $20 off. With both of those, you get the free digital subscription.
That? Well, it's a subscription that you can download to your computer or your mobile device. It's not just a PDF. We offer those as well. You can get those on our shop site, just a plain PDF that you can look if you have a big screen. But these other ones are for mobile editions, and you can read the magazine on your phone.
Father's Day is coming up this Sunday. Maybe you want to give this to your dad for Father's Day. You just go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and you get this deal, CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
That's it.
Hey, how many years has the magazine been rocking and rolling?
This is our 29th year.
Wow, isn't congratulations.
We are one of the very few left that have a hold-in-your-hand printed edition.
That's right. That's absolutely true.
And I love that.
Yeah. We've lost some great competitors. They're online now. But we, as far as I know, we lost the last Catholic apologetics magazine besides us last fall.
Yeah. So we're the last.
The Catholic Answer. So we're kind of the last man standing. And we intend to keep standing. I've talked to Chris Chuck about this numerous times, and he's very committed to the printed word.
Yeah. Is this another thing that is made possible in part by our donors who, when they give to Catholic Answers, like they're supporting this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We have a drive every year specifically for the magazine. Other than that, it supports itself with our subscribers.
Yes,
paying for it.
You got to get it. So if I go and order it now, I'll get it in time for the Faith and Science. I will get the Faith and Science issue.
Absolutely, that'll be the first one you get.
Okay, go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
That's right.
And if you have any complaints about Tim Ryland's appearance on the program,
yell at him.
Generally speaking, there's a lot of complaints after you come on here,
well,
Second Timothy.
You know what? I'll digitize my face for the next go around.
Thanks, Tim Ryland.
All right.
Thank you very, very much. Answers Magazine really is just one of the best Catholic magazines. It's one of the best Catholic publications you will get anywhere.
Oh, my God. I hear it all the time from folks when I'm out and about. They absolutely love this magazine. So if you don't have it, what are you waiting for? Let's do it.
That's awesome.
Right now.
Thanks,
right.
guys.
Thanks, Tim. Let's go. Well, we're going right here to San Diego for our first call. We go to Michael, who's watching on YouTube. Thank you for watching on YouTube, Michael. You are on with Tim Staples. Your question, please.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
My question is, could it be said in any way that good and evil need each other?
Not really, Michael. I mean, it depends what you mean by meet. Let's just toss out first what evil is. Evil, by definition, is a privation. It is a lack of some good that ought to be in a given nature, right? So it, though it is real, we don't want to be religious scientists to say evil is an illusion, or Hindus or Buddhists who will say it's an illusion. No, it's not an illusion. Evil is real, but it's a real privation, kind of like, to use an analogy, rust on metal. You know, rust doesn't exist on its own. It only exists because it adheres to the substance, which is metal. In the same way, then, we say, though evil is real, it doesn't have substantial being. It is only a lack of some good that ought to be in this substantial being or act or something like that. So, I mean, having established that, you can say, you know, you can see how we would be hesitant to say good can meet evil, because we don't want to give evil even the appearance of having substantial being, as if evil can walk in the door and say, hey, how are you doing? No, don't want to do that, because, again, evil is a real privation. Like, take the devil, for example, Michael. Some folks will say, well, isn't he pure evil? The answer is no. The angel, Lucifer, the fallen angel, Lucifer, is essentially good. But he is a fallen angel, and he's in a damned state because he chose against God. Right, so he's still essentially good, but he is in a condemned or a damned state. I know my Calvinist friends are going berserk now when you say that he's essentially good. But in order for something to exist substantially, it has to be good. Everything that God makes is good. God can't create evil. He creates good. In spite of Isaiah 45:7, that appears to say, I am the Lord, create good, and I create evil. He does not create evil. The moral imperfection, for example, of evil. That's really created by created beings who choose against God. But the privation that we're talking about that is evil doesn't have substantial being. And that's why I would hesitate to say, no, they don't really meet. Does that make sense, Michael?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Thanks so much.
All right. Appreciate your call.
Thank you very much, Michael. Jesse in Dallas, Texas is next. Jesse's listening on Guadalupe Radio. Jesse, your question for Tim Staples.
Hi, Tim.
Welcome.
First of all, I want to say thank you for all the videos that you have posted on YouTube.
Great.
You mean somebody's actually
watching those other than my mom?
Yes.
That is great to know.
Are you sure your mom's watching them?
Yes, she is.
My husband and I are in RCIA.
Great.
And we are here from Anglicanism because I wanted to know what we believed. And we found your videos along with Steve Ray and several others.
Wow.
And have been watching those. And it's just amazing.
Fantastic.
What I wanted to ask you is what would you suggest, what do you recommend for those of us who are in RCIA, we're planning on being confirmed in the church here probably in a month or two.
Oh, praise
God.
And
as, you know, what should we be doing daily, as like daily devotions, daily practices, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I will tell you, Jesse, and thanks so much for your call. I'll tell you what I did is, as I was studying the Catholic faith, I began to look into the various devotions. And grant, there are so many. But what I did is I looked into some of the more popular devotions in the church. And I ended up falling in love with the Divine Mercy Chaplet and the Rosary. I'll tell you what else I did. The three main things I did is Divine Mercy Chaplet, the Rosary, and then I got involved in a little prayer group at my parish, Our Lady of the Angels in Woodbridge, Virginia. God bless Father Collins, an old Stigmatine priest who has long since gone to his reward, a saintly, saintly man. And we had this small group where we got together and prayed the Divine Office. He introduced me to the Divine Office. That's the, you know, if you don't know, Jesse, that's the prayer that priests and religious all over the world pray every day, and it's five times a day they pray. Actually, it can be extended to seven, five or seven times a day. But what we did is just took evening prayer, and we prayed it together, and Father Collins introduced me to this phenomenal think that later I would be praying when I studied for the priesthood for 6 years. I prayed it every day. But and that's something that has stayed with me. I'm not as good as I used to be. Sometimes it gets stuck on the shelf there, and I don't. But those were the three that I fell in love with. Doesn't mean you have to. There are lots of other devotions in the church. But it's just really about, and by the way, it's the same thing with finding a confirmation name. What I did is I just started reading up on lives of the saints, and St. Thomas Aquinas just jumped out at me because he was one of the saints that I read. He had something to do with my becoming Catholic. He, along with St. Augustine and a number of other fathers of the church, but Thomas Aquinas, you know, I just really fell in love with, and I took him, Thomas, as my confirmation name. But really, I think the two things go hand in hand. It's a matter of just finding what you love. You know, the church does not prescribe the rosary. You have to pray the rosary. No, you don't. You don't have to. It's one of the most popular devotions in the history of the church. It's powerful. I recommend it highly. But really, Jesse, it's a matter of falling in love, finding the devotion that you love that helps you in your prayer life, and finding the saint that you really want to get to know more. And that will be your confirmation saint.
Jesse, you can probably hear the music. We got to take a quick break. Thank you so much for that call. It is Open Forum. Any question you have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. More of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN, communicating the faith.
And I wanted to tell you guys how great your show is because I listen to you guys for every day for the last past 5.5 months. It's because of you guys that I came to the Catholic faith. Now I'm going to church on Sunday for the first time because I just got out yesterday from jail. And I got my mom to go too, and my girlfriend is also going with me. Wow. She's willing to give the Catholic faith a try.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Would you like to become a Catholic Answers Live parish partner? We need you to help us spread the word at your local parish. We'll give you bumper stickers, window clings, flyers, everything you need to let your parish know about the best Catholic radio show on the air. We want you to partner with us. Email us at calpartners@catholic.com today and become a Catholic Answers parish partner.
Thanks, Nick, for the almost groovy music here on Tuesday. Cy Kellett, your host, Tim Staples, our guest. And whatever's on your mind is our topic. If you got a question about the Catholic faith, whether you're Catholic or not, we'd love to talk with you. 888-31-TRUTH is the number, 888-318-7884. Well, let me remind you that Tim has this fantastic book. Did you know Carlo on the air the other day called this your masterpiece? Behold Your Mother, A Biblical and Historical Defense of the Marian Doctrines.
And I told him to say that.
Did you? Because you are his boss, huh? All right.
Let's go. He can keep his job.
Okay. Congratulations, Carlo. Martin in Washington, listening on 1050 AM. You are on with Tim Staples. Your question, Martin?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Welcome.
Tim Ryland, before I answer the question, can you tell me how to get an old copy back issue of the magazine. I tried and had a tough time.
Well, Tim Ryland is no longer in the studio. I was going to say he's no longer with us, but I think
he is still with us.
He is still with us. He's just not in the studio. But can you answer?
I'll tell you what. Do you have email?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you just send an email to radio@catholic.com and I'll take care of it? Just let us know which issue you're looking for. Just radio@catholic.com.
Okay, great.
All right.
Here's a question.
No, it's no. That's it. That's all you get. You thought we were going to do two. Are you kidding me, Martin? We took care of it. Just kidding. Go ahead. Your question for Tim.
Yeah, I'm devoted to the Eucharist like the rest of you. I much appreciate
God.
You guys.
Yes.
But on that chapter 6 in John where he says, unless you eat my body and blood, you can have no life in you. And yet,
yes.
That seems too extreme to me. I mean, how about Protestants that seem to have life? How about Billy Graham, for example?
Sure, sure. It's a great question, Martin. And we need to understand that Jesus is giving us a theological norm here, a general theological norm. And this is normative all over Scripture. But there are exceptions often. You know, it's unlike the moral law, right? When it comes to the moral law, there are no exceptions. But when it comes to general theological norms, there are often exceptions, right? Now, Martin, just before I get to John 6, think about this. Hebrews 9:27 says, it's appointed for each man once to die and then the judgment, right? Now, Martin, you could ask this a similar kind of question and say, wait a second, that says it's appointed for each man once to die and then the judgment. Well, wait a minute. What about the fact that Elisha raised the dead, Peter, Paul, Jesus at his resurrection or thereafter? We had all kinds of people walking out of tombs. Well, these people all presumably died at least twice, right?
Yeah.
And then we have some folks who will never die, according to 1 Corinthians 15:51, 1 Thessalonians 4:16, those who are alive when Jesus comes will never die. So what's going on? Is this a contradiction? No. It's a general theological norm that's appointed for each man once to die and then the judgment. But yes, there are exceptions. In the same way here, in John 6, that is a general theological norm. We need the Eucharist for salvation. We are absolutely in desperate need of the grace of God and the life of God that's communicated to us through the Eucharist for we who are baptized and Catholic, so that we may be sustained in a state of sanctifying grace, because we can't keep ourselves in, you know, the love of God. We can allow God into our lives through the Eucharist so that He keeps us in the love of God, right? And of course, we have to cooperate in doing that. But the bottom line is, what Jesus is saying is a general theological norm that's essential for us to understand. That is, the Eucharist is necessary for our salvation. However, for those who do not know, and this is the key, Martin, they don't know, have never known, or they've never really comprehended the truth of what the Eucharist is and rejected it, they have the possibility to receive that life of grace because of their desire for Christ, their desire for truth, and they cooperate with the graces of God that they're given wherever they are, whether they're a Hindu somewhere in India who's never heard of Jesus, or a Buddhist, or a Baptist. If they seek God, and God alone, ultimately, Martin, is the judge, right? Not us. But if they seek God the best they can where they are, and they haven't and this is the key, Cy, Martin, both of you, not Cy Martin, but Cy and Martin, is you can't have rejected the truth when it's revealed to you. And God alone knows who these people are. But let's say, Martin, this person is a Baptist and good faith and is cooperating with the grace of God, but then one day hears Catholic Answers Live and wow, I really, and God reveals to him, shows him the truth of the Eucharist, and they say, but I'm rejecting that because I want to remain in my church. Well, they will be culpable for that on Judgment Day, right? And they will not have the life of God in them if they commit that which is a mortal sin, to knowingly reject essential truths of the faith. But again, Martin, the key is it's possible that the life of grace, the life of God, can be communicated extra sacramentally. whether it be baptism or the grace of the sacrament of Eucharist, the desire for the sacraments or for Christ himself or for truth can suffice until such time that they come to the fullness of the Catholic faith. So does that get at it for you, Martin?
Yeah, I thought that was very well put, my friend. You should go and you should do this full time.
He should.
I think I know, I might. Martin. All right, Martin.
Thanks, Martin, very much for the call. And go ahead and send me that email. I'd be very happy to forget to do that for you. I mean, to do that for you. Hector in Charleston, South Carolina, is next up. Hector, you are on with Tim Staples. Your question, please.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
My question is about Apocalypse, Revelations 3, chapter 3, 7.
Yes.
I was reading it, and I'm a little bit confused about it. I understand that Peter holds the keys, because in Matthew 16, 17 to 19, he's pretty specific.
Yes.
Peter's holding the keys.
Yes.
But is it? What is it saying in Apocalypse? Is it saying that Jesus is holding the keys, or who is holding the keys?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question, Hector. And here's the key. Of course, Jesus has the keys. Now, whether it's singular or plural, I mean, in Revelation 1:18, Jesus says, I am he who has the keys to death and Hades, right? Keys in the plural. Here in Revelation 3:7, he has the key, quoting Isaiah 22. Key, keys. The bottom line is Jesus has them. And we have to understand that when it's not as though when Jesus communicates the keys to Peter, you know, oh, poor Jesus, he doesn't have the keys anymore, so he just sits in heaven twiddling his thumbs because the Pope's in charge now, right? Huh. No, the Pope's authority, when Peter has the keys, it's understood that Jesus isn't giving up anything. Peter and his successors, the popes, participate in this great gift and power that Jesus alone possesses in an absolute, strict sense. So, yes, Jesus has the keys. Yes, Jesus has the key. Whether you're talking about the keys of death and Hades in Revelation 1:18 or the key here of David referring to Isaiah 22. And by the way, or in Isaiah 20, I think it's... I forget the verses there, 20 through 22, I think it is there in Isaiah. And by the way, this applies too in the Old Testament, because remember that the Old Testament type, when you go to Isaiah chapter 20 there and read about the key of the house of David, King Hezekiah was king at the time, and his prime minister or master of the palace, as some translates have it, at the time was Shebna. And Shebna had been wicked. And so the prophet comes to him and says, you're going to be removed from your office, and God's going to place Eliakim in your place. And it's in that context, he says, I will take the key of the house of David from Shebna and give it to Eliakim. But that doesn't mean, and follow me on this, Hector, it doesn't mean that the king doesn't have any power because, oh, now I've given the key to Shebna or Eliakim. No, this is a symbol of a sort of delegated authority from the king to the prime minister. This is fulfilled in the New Testament, in the New Covenant, with Jesus, who is the king, who communicates his authority. He delegates that authority to Peter and his successors. Does that help at all there, Hector?
Hector? No.
Did we lose Hector?
Hector is stunned by the power of your answers.
So. Yes. I hope so. I hope he sees the truth now and will go share it.
We will take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Tim Staples, who's with us for 2 hours today. That's fantastic. Right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. Are you looking for a Catholic speaker to come fire up your conference or parish event? Or maybe give your high school or college students some hands-on training in apologetics? Catholic Answers has a team of first-rate speakers ready to hop in the car or board a plane to come speak to your group. To book a speaker, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. We look forward to seeing you.
Right now, Catholic Answers is conducting its summer campaign. We're going into the lean summer months, and we're forecasting a shortfall of $220,000 before our income picks up again later in the year. This is a crucial time because we need to offset that drop in donations. To make your donation and get your special thank you gifts, visit Catholic.com and click the summer campaign banner. Or call us toll free at 888-291-8000. That's the summer campaign banner at Catholic.com or call toll free 888-291-8000.
Do you want to end abortion? Halt the attack on traditional marriage? And ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tim Staples, our guest, open forum, our topic, and we go straight now to Aaron in Seattle watching on Facebook. Thanks for watching on Facebook, Aaron. Your question for Tim Staples.
Thank you. In the Old Testament, God declares that some foods are unclean. In the New Testament, God declares that all foods are clean.
Yes.
Did God change his mind?
Yes, that's a great question. And the answer is no. Of course, God doesn't change his mind. Here, a great analogy was given about 1,800 years ago on this and similar questions by St. Irenaeus when he was dealing with an ancient heretic named Marcion. And Marcion believed that the Old Testament and New Testament are so radically different, they have to be, you know, two different gods. And he actually came up with this notion of two gods or two principles, right? You have a evil God that's responsible for the Old Testament and a good God that's responsible for the New because of these differences. And St. Irenaeus' response to him was basically, no, it's not that God changes when we see the changes from Old to New Testament, but it's that man changes. And he uses the analogy of a child. And I love that because I use this, you know, I'm a father of seven kids. Now, if I treated my three-year-old the same as I treat my 14-year-old, I would have a pretty maladjusted 14-year-old.
Right. You're
going to pull your 14-year-old's pants down and spank them in the butt? Well, you better not, right? Because that would be wrong. See, so God, we have to understand, if we go back to, of course, the Garden of Eden, right? God created man in perfection with, you know, everything that he needs. They chose to walk away, Adam and Eve. They walked away from God, hence sin and death enters in. And God takes a step back. When Adam and Eve say, you know, we don't want you in our lives, God takes a step back because he respects our freedom. And man then begins to try to reach out to God. And over time, over the centuries, God reaches down to man out of love and begins to reveal himself in bits and pieces. And that's where the Old Covenant, dietary laws, all these sorts of things are kind of God's way of reaching down where men are. And all religions ever created by men, and by the way, just so you know, our caller knows, this is what essentially distinguishes the Judeo-Christian religion from the other religions of the world. They were all created by men trying to reach up to God, whereas Judeo-Christianity is God reaching down to men. And he takes men where they are. And if you look at any religion in the world, you'll see there are dietary restrictions because food is so important to us as human beings. You know, we dine together as families, and it's you know, it communicates love and bonding. It joins us together and such. So God takes, you know, in many of the dietary laws in the Old Testament, you had similar dietary laws in other cultures. But God creates these that are unique for the Jews. There are certain things about the dietary laws that are unique. Why? Because they're his family. In the same way, you know, different families have different sort of traditions that grow up around their dinner tables. I know we do in my family. And so now when Jesus comes along, of course, you know, what you have in the Old Testament is a lot of these rules, the dietary restrictions and such, were not only there to bind the ancient people together, to give them a unique sort of standing with God, but they also, at the same time, and this is where it gets exciting, symbolized certain things about the fullness of the revelation that God was going to give in Jesus Christ. And so what Jesus says, for example, in Matthew 15, you know, when he makes the revolutionary statement, it's not that which goes into the mouth that defiles a man, but that which comes out of the mouth, ek cardion, out of the heart, that's what defiles a man. And in making that statement, Matthew points out, he declares all foods clean. That was a revolutionary statement. But why did he do that? Because all of those dietary restrictions in the Old Testament had served their purpose in both, you know, creating that unique people in the Old Covenant and pointing forward to it, its fulfillment in Jesus Christ. So again, it's not that God changed at all. No, this was all God's plan where he's bringing his people along, kind of like the child, right, given rules to a three-year-old that he doesn't give to 14-year-olds. But once they get to 14, 15, 16, he introduces them to things that they couldn't have handled when they were three. And that's what we have in Jesus Christ. Does that, I mean, this is kind of a, in a nutshell, sort of scratching the surface answer, but do you get what I'm saying there?
Aaron?
Yeah, they served a purpose for a specific time and a specific people. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Well, all right, Aaron, thank you. Thank you so much for that call. Appreciate it. We go now to Jared in Cupertino, California. Jared, thanks for your call. You are on with Tim Staples.
Oh, hello. My question was just, this is probably a question that's been reiterated many times over throughout history, but I guess because I wanted to know what your input on it was.
Yes.
So if there is heaven and our end goal is effectively heaven, what's the point of Earth, I guess?
Oh, sure, Jared. Yeah, that's a simple little question. Huh? Actually, this is quite a profound question, Jared. And basically, you're asking the question, you know, why do we have this test at all? Why couldn't God just create us with the beatific vision? But Jared, here's the bottom line. God, there is something so profound. And for my Calvinist friends, I don't know why you don't get this. There is something so essential to free will. It's part of the essence of who we are as human beings, as rational beings, both angels and men. God chose to create us in what the Catechism of the Catholic Church calls in statu vie, and in our tradition, that's Latin for in a state of journeying. He didn't create us at the end of the journey. That is to create us in heaven. But he chose to create us in statu vie. And why is that? Well, as the Catechism points out, free will, you know, is a radical concept, and it makes possible the reality of mortal sin that can bring such evils as Lucifer and Hitler. But it also makes possible love. Because with that, there's something so profound. Now, we would have, if God created us immediately in the presence of God in the beatific vision, we would have experienced love in some sense because we would possess God in the beatific vision who is love. But we would not know love like we do now because of this great gift of freedom. Because God chose to create the angels in a state of journeying where they had to make a choice. Now, their choice was immediate because of the fact that they're pure spirits. They don't reason discursively like we do, you know, A plus B plus C equals D. They don't do. They see everything at once. They made their choice. But he chose to create human beings to get at your point, Jared, on earth because we're made of stuff. He puts us on something that's made of stuff. And our choice lasts over our period of, you know, 70 years, right? As the psalmist says, of course, it can be 100 years or whatever. And so, you know, it's really, I think it boils down to this reality. If God would have, and like Cy and I were talking about this, you know, it's not like God himself said, gee, I wish I would have thought of creating them, you know, with the beatific. Of course, God knew that. But God also knew there would be eternal loss. Think about that, Jared. If God just created us with the beatific vision, we would have never experienced the passion of our Lord. We would never experience, you know, the compassion of reaching out and loving the sick and the poor and the destitute, and also just experiencing the joys of this life and choosing God. Now, of course, there's the danger of choosing against God, and that's real. But God knows that even in that, even in the evil choices that people made, God knew he would ultimately bring good from those two. And that, my friends, is personified in the person of Jesus Christ. The greatest evil that was ever committed or could ever be committed, deicide, we killed God. But God brings the greatest good out of that. And that's how we can know that God will bring good about all the out of all these lesser evils, like the World War II and World War I and the rapes of who knows how many millions of people and murders and so forth. God brings good even out of that. So I know, Jared, this is, again, we're scratching the surface of a very complex question, but basically God gave us earth so we could experience love in a way we could not without it.
Jay, and we will leave it there, Jared, only because we're getting near the top of the hour and I want to try to get as many calls as in as we can. We go now to Kaylin in Indiana, watching on YouTube. Thanks for watching on YouTube, Kaylin. Your question.
Hello, gentlemen. Yes. So my wife and I and our two little children are pretty recent converts to the faith.
Great.
And I grew up in a very, very fundamentalist Protestant background. My grandpa, who I love very dearly, he is actually the most Catholic man that I know, but unfortunately, yes. He thinks Catholicism is the Jack Chick from Chick Publications version.
Oh, boy.
Of Catholicism.
Yes.
And we recently had a conversation together when he was very charitable, and it was a very pleasant conversation.
Yes.
But he does not think that Catholicism is Christianity.
Sure.
And I was curious if you guys might have some suggestions. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I do have some suggestions. I could give you a boatload of suggestions, in fact, but I can so relate to your father because I was there. I used to believe Catholicism is not Christianity, and anybody who really believes that Catholic stuff is going to hell. That is what I believed. Oh, God help me. I cringe when I say that now, but yes, right. Who died and made you God and judge of all, Tim? But I really did believe that. But here's, let me recommend three books for you that I think will really be helpful. All right. Easy for me to say. Helpful. One is a book, you know, you don't hear about a whole lot anymore, but a great book by a friend of ours, David Curry, called, and the title is Born Fundamentalist, Born Again Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really, really good book for a fundamentalist because, you know, he shares the truths of the faith, but it's all also framed in a story and discovery and such. It's really well done. And along the same lines, Surprised by Truth, you know, the first edition, I actually happen to be in that book,
mm-hmm.
but Surprised by Truth, it's published by Basilica. Well, now they've been bought out by St. Benedict Press. But a great book. It has not just my story, but 11 different stories of converts, many of them fundamentalist evangelicals like I was. And that, too, I think both of those books come from the story of, you know, from the perspective of stories. And I think, uh-huh. you know, as my wife always said, who was a marketer before she married me, you know, she always said, facts tell, stories sell, right? Great couple of books. Also, one more, man, you got to get is Why We're Catholic by Trent Horn. Just came out here at Catholic Answers Press. Really simple. It's simply written and just wonderful. It's not a deep scholarly book, but it's perfect, I think, for your father. So that would be three I would recommend. And, of course, avail yourself to Catholic.com. We have tens of thousands of pages of free information for you.
Okay, Kalen?
Great. Thank you guys so much.
Okay.
Great. Thank you very, very much. So all day I felt like there's some kind of delay on the phone. I don't know why. That. Sometimes you know, I speak and then it takes
maybe
a minute,
the problem is with you, Si.
Do you think I have a delay? Perhaps I do.
In
I
the brain.
Well, yes. We're all aware of that, Tim. I don't like to talk about it. Hey, if you're on the line and you called for Open Forum, just stay right where you are because Open Forum doesn't end now. It just takes a brief break for the top of the hour. We'll be back with Tim Staples for the second hour of Open Forum. If you haven't called but you're thinking, oh, maybe they can address this question I've always had about the Catholic faith, or maybe there's someone in your life that you would like to be able to explain something to and you need a little help with that. Or maybe you'd like to challenge us from your perspective about something that Catholics believe. All of that is welcome, whether you're Catholic or not. Just pick up the phone and call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live, Open Forum with Tim Staples right after this.